This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange.
This pilot, though, who flew Barack Obama during his 2008 presidential campaign, says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
An unidentified object seen over the sky above the Rosedale area.
The shot today video that's got all of Texas talking, probably the whole country, from iReporter, who shot this on a cell phone near Stephenville, Texas. The UFO, according to witnesses, and the witnesses include local police and other public figures.
When several dozen residents looked up and saw a UFO more than once.
Three very mysterious shiny lights over Breckenridge have police and residents puzzled.
Tonight we have never before seen videotape of UFOs over Colorado.
If you noticed strange lights in the sky over the weekend, you aren't alone. KCTV5's Alan Schoaf went to Lee's Summit to get to the bottom of more than a dozen UFO sightings.
Never before seen footage of UFO sightings this year being shown at a conference in Pontefract.
Local police never definitively said who's to blame. Locals say it has to be something out of this world.
I'm taking a random picture, zoomed in, and there it was. There was a UFO.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unwonderful, and the unsuspecting.
Johnny and Billy here, and every Sunday afternoon we talk about ghosts, UFOs, cryptozoology, conspiracies, all sorts of crazy stuff. And our guest today, returning, Michael W. Hall, the founder of the UFO I-Team. Welcome back to the show, buddy.
Hey, Johnny. Hey, Billy. Thank you for having me back.
Good. It's great to have you.
Are you in quarantine right now?
I'm here at ground zero, of course. You know, you guys are as well, being in the state of Washington, but I'm just 17 miles north of Seattle.
Ugh.
So it is very interesting. People are not doing much of anything nowadays, although I've noticed people now have come out of the woodwork, almost as if bears out of hibernation. I've seen a lot more cars on the road, a lot more people walking even down the street. So you never know how long this is going to last as far as the public's will and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm seeing people get kind of frustrated with being home and not being able to go out and socialize. I think that's getting to be a difficult thing for people.
Well, and you know what's been happening? I don't know if you guys have noticed this as well, but the bandwidth on the internet has just been stretched to the max.
Yeah.
People are having a very difficult time even communicating on their electronic devices, and keeping radio shows on the air is a real challenge right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, my internet has dropped out twice this morning already.
Hopefully. That will be one positive thing that comes out of this entire situation is that, the providers out there, all I got to do is just start adding some more servers and be prepared for this kind of thing in the future.
I guess they've noticed a difference in like the hole in the ozone and our pollution level and even the sound that the earth makes. They can hear a lot more going on with the earth because we're not moving around as much.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Johnny, the UFO I-Team, the group that I founded and direct, we have done a lot of scientific research regarding the Schumann resonance of the planet, 7.83 cycles per second. And in reality, I never thought of the fact that the Schumann resonance would maybe be stronger at this point with all the cacophony at this time. That really brings up the whole idea of we have in our extensive gear that we have, night vision, FLIR photography, we even use oscilloscopes to transfer light waves into sound waves when we're out there on our sky watches. We have found lately that some of these anomalous aircraft that we are able to capture on tape are traveling not in a straight line, But literally, when you condense it and compact it down onto an oscilloscope, they're traveling in the same resonance as the Earth's Schumann resonance. Their paths are oscillating and not going in a straight line. So this would be an interesting time. I'm going to have to tell this to Lee Strauss and Dave Mason, our techie guys on the crew, because they're the ones that have come to me with the idea that it looks like these people or entities or whoever these craft are know about the Schumann resonance of our planet.
You said a lot of big words in there that I don't know, but I'll take your word for it.
I got stuck on oscillating or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I think you get the idea. Anyway, it's just fascinating stuff when we have the gear that we're getting a hold of now, and being able to, you know, analyze the footage that we're capturing of anomalous aerial activity. It's fascinating what we're finding out.
It is fascinating when you think about that we vibrate at a certain frequency, and, you know, and we resonate those vibrations and we share them with one another, that as we slow down and as there are less people in close proximity, that would probably change. Those vibrations would reduce a little bit.
And maybe even, Billy, harmonize with one another more closely.
Yes.
To the Earth's resonance as well.
Right. I've noticed that since I've been kind of, I have a lot of respiratory problems and such. So I've been isolated for about 5 weeks now. I've noticed a change in my, not only with my relationship to the Earth, but that my wife and I seem to be on a different wavelength now. We can almost think alike, and we seem to be able to match up our energy a lot easier. We do meditations, and we just seem to come together a lot easier.
I have thought of that as well, Billy, the idea that this could be one of the potentially unintended positive consequences of the social distancing. The fact that our relationships that we do have, that we covet, I think will become stronger during this period of time. And I think you're right that, of course, we all have heard about this idea of the slider syndrome, where literally it's called streetlight interruption syndrome. People will affect the streetlights as they go by in their cars or even walking down the street. So we know that our mind's power, the brain power, and the oscillations of our brain affect electronic devices. So I'm wondering if that is becoming more prevalent as well during this period of time.
That could be. My wife is, she has a lot of electrical energy, and she sometimes affects electrical appliances or TV or her computer in an adverse way. But that hasn't happened since we've been isolated. That's an interesting thing, too.
Here's an experiment that I have done, and I wouldn't advise anyone to do this. Because I don't know what the real ramifications of it are. But if you take your normal electronic key fob for your car, if you've got a modern car that can be turned on or the lights can be turned on by your key fob, and potentially you go out to the mall parking lot or whatever where you've got a large range of place that you can go to, and you go to the very edge of the distance that your car will work from your key fob. For instance, you could turn your lights on, you know. When you get to that distance of maybe, what, 100 feet, whatever, then you go another 20 feet or go beyond that range so it doesn't work. Then you take your key fob. Actually, this is what I've done. I don't necessarily say that anybody should do it. You put it to your forehead, turn your key fob on, and guess what? It works better because your mind is basically making that signal stronger and being able to boost the signal from your own brain. Isn't that strange?
Wow.
Oh, that's very interesting.
It was Tesla who said we could generate electricity or energy just through the atmosphere, and like with his Tesla Tower based on technology from the ancient Egyptians' pyramids, right?
Well, I think you're right on the money when you kind of think of the idea of the Schumann resonance around the planet. By the way, the Schumann resonance around the planet is like an 80 mile up bubble around the planet. So from the surface of the Earth, go up 80 miles or so. And that is the position or the place around our planet that still resonates to the Earth's frequency. When you're calling about the idea that, you know, our brain waves interact in a certain frequency, the pyramids probably did the same thing. I'm wondering, and the whole Tesla thing is that what if someone did some Tesla experiments nowadays to find out whether that field of energy that Tesla had discovered around the planet is more stronger now than ever? Because of the, like Billy was saying, the cacophony is now much lower, and maybe the resonance is much stronger. These are things that I think are fascinating to talk about. And literally, we have probably never had an opportunity on our planet to get into these kinds of experiments right now, because the entire ecosphere of our little blue marble is literally affected by this.
Well, that and plus the FBI took all of Tesla's work and kind of confiscated it and held it for years and finally gave some of it back to his family.
Yeah. But, George Bush's uncle, if you know that story.
Ooh, what's that story?
Well, George Bush's uncle was in the FBI at the time and was the guy that was tasked to go get Tesla's materials as soon as he passed away.
Oh,
perfect. That's the rumor.
Perfect.
Wow. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you can Google that term, you know, George Bush, and it wouldn't have been senior, yeah. But it would George Bush, Tesla, FBI. That'll come up with lots of interesting material to read.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, George H.W. Bush was the FBI director for a while.
You got it.
Yeah. So that makes some sense.
Now, was he really in Texas when JFK was assassinated?
Well, my JFK assassination aficionado expert, Brian Snowdy, who does phenomenal work on the internet with his lectures, says, indeed, not only was George Bush Sr. there at Dealey Plaza and photographed as being there, but also George Bush Jr. was there as well as a young 20-something guy. There's all sorts of interesting connections there, not only with the Bushes, but with Richard Nixon being in town because of the Pepsi-Cola convention going on at the same time in Dealey Plaza. All sorts of interesting stuff there. I'm big in conspiracy theories of all kinds, but the JFK assassination thing is just really stuck underneath my craw for decades.
So who do you think did it?
Well, like I said, my friend, I'm not the expert, but my friend Brian Snowdy, that's S-N-O-D-D-Y, by the way, is how you pronounce his last name, or spell his last name, if you'd like to look him up. He believes, after all of his research, that there were probably four or maybe even five nests of multiple shooters. And a nest of shooter would have entailed an actual shooter, a communications spotter with a walkie-talkie, and also a watcher to make sure that anybody was not getting suspicious. And they're talking about the idea of shooters being on the overpass in front of the motorcade, shooters being in the Valtex building behind the motorcade, and, of course, the Texas School Depository off to the right-hand side of the motorcade. But not on the sixth floor where supposedly Lee Harvey Oswald was supposed to be. And indeed, he was not at the time. But on the floor below that, or two floors below that, on the other side of the school book depository was supposedly another nest of shooters. And there's always been the rumor of the nest, or at least the one shooter in the storm drain off to the right hand side of the motorcade as it was coming right by very closely. And then, of course, the major hit looks like it was taken place from the grassy knoll behind the picket fence. So those are just a few of you know, the things that Brian is very well versed in telling people about that just brings you down to the bottom line that, you know, it looks like Lee Harvey Oswald did not even pull the trigger.
And didn't the Warren Commission kind of finally say, well, you know what, it looks like there was some kind of conspiracy involved. We don't know what the hell happened, but it looked like it. Or did I get fake news?
No, you got it. They were there basically just to cover the whole thing up. There was it's a huge debacle that happened during that period of time afterwards. Of course, many people ended up turned up dead that could have been witnesses to this event. And many other people basically just corroborated the issue of multiple shooters, but were the evidence was suppressed at that time during the hearings of the Warren Commission. So, it's fascinating. The idea that in 1963, an actual coup could have taken place in America that no one really knows about.
I hear everything changed after that.
Well, it sure did kind of go downhill relatively quickly as far as the control of the masses and our abilities to, self-govern, those kinds of things. Fascinating. Of course, that's when the whole issue of the space race happened, the whole issue of, Kennedy at that time wanting to share information with the Soviets on cooperation in space and all that kind of thing. There's a whole lot of reasons, supposedly, that there was an imperative to take out the president of the United States at that time. Probably not one of them was the overall arching one, but they all added to the mix that supposedly they tried to kill the president in Chicago initially, a couple months before that, and then in Florida as well, before they finally decided to go forth with the entire operation in Dallas, Texas.
Well, apparently he ticked off quite a few people, so there'd be a lot of people with reasons, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, here's the interesting thing that I always think about, Johnny and Billy. What would have been that major overarching reason why in 1963 there was a group of people, we think, who knows, could be off planet or not, but a group on our planet decided that they needed to get rid of the actual president of the United States. I mean, that was a major, major bold move on the part of any kind of cabal out there. You might want to think that, okay, we're going to get rid of this guy and discredit him, and so he can't get reelected. We may want to make sure that something like this never happens again. We get a liberal president in there that really is going to muck up the works. No, they just needed to end it immediately, and it seems like there was an imperative at that time to do that.
The stories that I've heard are some of the documentaries that are kind of underground documentaries seem to indicate that JFK was making every effort to end the Vietnam War, which was not a popular move with a lot of politicians and a lot of business people, because there was a lot of money to be made. And so I thought that was an interesting perspective, because, that's we respond to money in this country. And if that's the case, there would have been a lot of business losses if he had stopped the war at that time.
Well, exactly, Billy. As a matter of fact, look what happened. Look what President Johnson did right after Kennedy was shot. He literally upgraded the war in Vietnam and just went crazy with that stuff. So that's good evidence, is that that is probably one of the reasons. Of course, one of the other reasons could have been also that either Kennedy or Marilyn Monroe, let's put it that way, was on the cusp of potentially outing the entire UFO phenomena to the American public as well. So who knows what the overall arching reason was, but for some reason it had to be done immediately. And of course, there's the famous wet memo that was uncovered that basically said between the people, the powers that be behind the scenes, that this situation has now become wet and it must be taken care of. That meaning wet being mafia language for assassination.
Right.
Wow. That's deep.
Guys. This is cool. I had no idea we're going to go down this rabbit hole today, and I'm just enjoying this because you don't really get a chance often to talk about different conspiracy theories out there that have been rehashed and rehashed, but really get down to the nitty gritty.
Well,
I think the Kennedy conspiracy is, I think it's validated that there was a conspiracy. And I think that it's obvious that Lee Harvey Oswald was not the shooter. So that really opens up a lot to speculation. And of course, that's what conspiracy theories are about, is speculation. So I think it's, you know, I think it's interesting to go there because it gives us a sense of how people think, how people act, especially people in power. And I think that people in power act a lot differently than the average person.
Yeah, for some reason. Isn't that strange? Ultimate power corrupts ultimately. So
yes.
Fascinating subject. So
don't accuse me of thinking.
I tell you what, you are amazing kind of guy. You are the type of dude that could, you've got this mind that has a technical aspect to it, but is very creative as well. And it really came out in my mind during the actual conference that we, by the way, I want to give you kudos, Johnny, as being the Quinault Beach UFO Paranormal Conference that was taking place this March that you put on at Quinault Beach was the last major conference of any kind that was taking place during just before this shutdown of the coronavirus. And you literally pulled that off just in the nick of time. That was fascinating.
Well, I couldn't have done it without all the help that you guys did. I mean, they didn't come to see me. They came to see you guys.
Well, and the fact that we were able to, in literally a span of about 2 weeks, was it, Johnny,
mm-hmm.
pull off the Academy of Paranormal Arts and Sciences annual award ceremony just before the event was just a coup. A feather in your cap, I believe, because literally we had people Skyping in from around the world to present and accept their paranormal awards in various categories. I thought that was fascinating.
Well, you did all the heavy lifting there. I can't take kudos. I appreciate the kudos, but you did all the hard work there.
Well, you know, you come up, Billy, with the idea of something, right? And on paper, it looks real good. And then all of a sudden, you realize, wait a minute, we're going to have Philip Mantle Skype in from the UK. We're going to have Grant Cameron Skyping in from Manitoba, Canada. James Rigney from Australia. And I think the kicker for me was literally having from Pascagoula, Mississippi, Calvin Parker Skype in to accept his experiencer Lifetime Experiencer Award as well.
Wow.
These were people that I, you know, thought would be great to be able to bring in, along with the presenters like Daryl Sims and David Pilates and, you know, Nick Pope and all those folks that were there as well. And Johnny literally pulled off the electronic wizardry to make that happen. I was very pleased.
He's a whiz. He really is an electronic whiz.
Oh, enough about me. Hey, more coming up with the UFO I-Team's Michael W. Hall on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and our good friend Michael W. Hall, founder of the UFO I-Team, joining us today.
Oh, Johnny, I tell you what, if people want to get up to speed on what we're doing at the UFO I-Team, they can go to our Facebook page. They will see some of the brand new video that we've posted there of strange anomalous objects that we've caught on tape, or others have caught on tape, and we've enhanced. We had found a video out there that recorded the latest release of the SpaceX satellites that Elon Musk has been putting up, you know, over the last few months. These are very extraordinary deployments of satellites, and the fact that they are literally straight lines of contiguous satellites that seem to be almost hooked together somehow, but equidistant from one another. And you'll see in this one video that I'm talking about, 20 SpaceX satellites in a straight line running from approximately maybe the 2 o'clock position on the face of a clock down to the 8 o'clock position or 7 o'clock position on the face of a clock in a diagonal manner from north to south along the night sky. Now, here's the funny thing. These are unique enough just to watch being deployed because they literally are equidistant apart and go in a straight line, and are very striking to watch and to record on video. Someone did that. And then when our guys got a hold of Dave Mason, you know, Lee Strauss, and even my son Cameron Hall, who's kind of a technical wizard himself, got a hold of this videotape and enhanced it, literally the last of the 20 satellites that are in line from the SpaceX deployment seems to be literally attacked, pushed, by the way, by another anomalous object that manifests itself right next to it and then bumps it out of line for just a split second. And then it continues on. But it's very striking because we have literally found this videotape and have been able to enhance it and zoom in and show it over and over in a repeating format, that there's something strange going on with this one, at least, deployment of the SpaceX satellites, in the fact that something or someone looks like is trying to attack this string of satellites that are being deployed at the time. That's very interesting.
I've read a little bit about his desire to put all these satellites in orbit and create an internet system that would exceed everything that we have today. But I hadn't heard that one. I hadn't heard about the one that's being pushed around.
There's also another video we put up recently that looks so strange. It looks like it's either a giant galactic gathering of UFOs flying across the night sky, more than 50 of them, by the way, or it's some high-flying flock of geese, highly reflective in night vision video. That one has basically been kind of studied by Lee Strauss and Dave Mason, and Dave is the one who says he thinks that in his FLIR photography experience that he does find these things up there very high in the atmosphere that turn out to be bird flocks, and the way that he can determine that between an anomalous object and a biological object like a bird flock is that his FLIR photography actually will print out the heat signature of these objects as well. When you're talking anomalous objects, typically they're very, very cold in the night sky, and we can corroborate that with the actual return that he gets from his FLIR cameras. This latest flock up there, it looks to be in the same temperature range as potentially birds as well. So that's how we are becoming discerning in this regard when it comes to people throwing videotape up there and claiming that it's all UFOs, and some of it, you know, doesn't have to be.
You said you had some other things going on with the UFO I-Team?
Oh, heck yeah. Gosh, as a matter of fact, I don't know if we haven't talked about the Admiral Wilson smoking gun UFO memo of the century in a while. That seems to be heating up again. The idea being that if anyone hasn't heard, the Richard Dolan, the famous UFO historian, has dubbed the leak of this 15-page memo from a government scientist by the name of Eric Davis interviewing the then J2, Joint Chiefs of Staff, Second in Command, Thomas Ray Wilson, about UFOs and the startling revelations that contain in that memo were released finally on Reddit and Twitter in June of last year. That is really, the subject matter was just astonishing. The idea confirming in this memo from a high-ranking government official and scientist that the crash at Roswell, New Mexico, literally happened in 1947 or so. The fact that they recovered alien technology in a craft, as well as bodies, both dead and alive. They're talking in this memo about having a working craft, spaceship, that can travel through interstellar space and through our atmosphere, of course, and then underwater, as well as through dimensions. This memo was so shocking that when I finally received a copy of it way back in the beginning of 2019 from my client, Grant Cameron, who received it from the Australian ufologist James Rigney from the Edgar Mitchell estate, by the way. This is paperwork that was going to be thrown out by his family because they weren't interested in all the banker boxes full of material that Edgar Mitchell had accumulated over his lifetime. James Rigney found this 15-page memo, got a hold of Grant Cameron, and Grant Cameron sent it to me immediately and said, "What do we do with this holy grail of ufology?" But since then, there hasn't been a lot of evidence or even blowback. It's been a giant black hole regarding this memo, and no one has even come forth and vociferously denied their involvement in it, including people like Russell Targ, Eric Davis and Kit Green, Robert Bigelow, and all those folks that are named. And of course, Admiral Wilson has been totally mum on the subject and on this whole idea of this happening, back in 2002, the memo was released. But I'll tell you what, here's the breaking news I wanted to get to for you guys today. Literally at one point, Hal Puthoff appeared at a local conference in West Virginia in February of this year. And it was the first evidence that we have ever had of any corroboration that this memo could be true and correct. Because what he said after the conference, he was answering questions by the audience. Someone had the chutzpah at the time to ask him to comment on the Admiral Wilson UFO memo. And of course, Hal Puthoff up to that point had said that even him denying the memo existed or his involvement in the memo would breach his security oath. So he wasn't saying anything up to this point. When in reality, at that time, he says, well, this Admiral Wilson UFO memo was released on the internet, and it was my colleague, Dr. Eric Davis, who they have worked together for decades. It was my colleague, Eric Davis, who interviewed Admiral Wilson about the subject matter contained in the memo. And since this project seems to be an ongoing program, I cannot comment on it. But for the very first time in February of this year, we have actual corroboration from a high-level source like Hal Puthoff that indeed Eric Davis, the government scientist, has been involved in NIDS and the aviary and all of these things for years and decades, literally did interview Admiral Wilson in the back of his staff car behind the EG&G building at McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas, Nevada for an hour and 10 minutes about what he knew and didn't know about UFOs. That's the latest breaking news. By the way, here's the other breaking news that actually is getting me so excited. I don't know if you followed any of the what they call young guns out there. The what Grant Cameron has coined the term young guns being the new researchers, the technically savvy internet people that can get to the back chans of the internet and find out things that no one has been able to find out before as far as corroboration. Supposedly, the young guns out there are about ready to break the Admiral Wilson memo in the fact that they have now some corroboration of some specific items and personnel that can be verified from this memo that will literally blow a lid off of the secrecy idea of this memo being true and correct or not. So I'm waiting for that within, hopefully, even the next few weeks.
You know, you hear about people saying, well, the aliens are here, and they're here to help us. Why aren't they helping us?
Whenever you hear about certain stories like that, you wonder. And then again, you hear the stories of, for instance, them actually shutting down our nuclear missile sites as well. So you wonder if they are helping us or what their agenda is and maybe how long-term it is. I would assume that, as Billy was mentioning, this time on our planet is very unique, and the potential Schumann resonance vibration of our planet might be so strong right now that the aliens have taken notice of what's happening. I'm wondering, off the back of my head or to the side, I'm wondering what could happen in that regard as far as alien disclosure, either maybe not even by the government, by the off-planet worlders themselves at this point, knowing that something strange and unique is going on the planet. I don't know.
Yeah, apparently, according to some, there's this, what is it called? Some high council or galactic council, I think. Have you ever heard of that?
Of course. Well, here's the deal. If you're looking at the vastness of the universe that we even know about, I always point to the Hubble deep field photograph, you know, that they took of one slice of the sky about the thickness of a dime held out at arm's length. They decided to focus the Hubble telescope in one section of a darkened part of the universe that they didn't think that anything existed there, and literally came up with a photograph that listed thousands and thousands of galaxies. So if you're talking one small slice of our universe has thousands and thousands of visible galaxies, and realize how far and advanced and wide this whole universe could be, you got to realize that, my gosh, our small perspective here on this planet, even our small perspective in the, 100 light year across Milky Way itself, is so minute compared to the reality of space. The idea of having a galactic federation in our own little neck of the woods that might have representatives from various nearby galaxies kind of getting together periodically sure makes a whole lot of sense. We do that on the planet ourselves right now, just in our own political sphere. So
I wonder, like, if there is a galactic council, if they have a human representing us. Like, okay, total off-the-cuff conspiracy. Maybe they faked the JFK assassination, and JFK is our representative in the Galactic Council because they liked him, and maybe he's the guy making the decisions. Conspiracy? Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's... I often think about that, and I think about the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
Remember at the very end of that movie, the astronaut, portrayed by Keir Dulley, great actor at that time, his name was Dave, you know, in the movie, was literally taken from the ship by some outworld or off-world race or entity and placed in a small apartment that looked like an apartment and was studying him as a representative of the human race, with the idea that if he passed the tests that they were going to put him through in this small little experiment that they were doing, that the human race would be allowed to continue on to live. And I always get the feeling every once in a while, would it be weird that, you know, all of these alien abductions take place potentially, you know, through the decades? What if they are sampling just random individuals off of our planet and making a decision galactic-wide about our future existence from people like who knows off the street? You know, let's take a look at how the human race is going, and we're going to pick up this guy who might even be a homeless person and make a judgment on the human race on their development. Wouldn't that be weird?
Oh, yeah. Now, if you were in that position, you were a member of the Galactic Council looking on Earth, knowing what we know of how we treat each other, how we treat our planet, how we treat ourselves, what would your verdict be?
You would even tend to think that at one point, you know, in the Old Testament, the Lord of all decided that, you know, we're going to wipe out all the life on the planet with a flood because it's not going well. And you wonder if you would have that own opinion if you were on the Galactic Council. If you were the earthly representative, let's say, on the Galactic Council going, yeah, you know, we do have our problems down there, but, you know, there's some good folks as well. And, of course, as some in the Old Testament would say, you don't want to wipe out the entire planet just because of some bad apples, you know, out there. Give them a chance. You know, that would probably be my stance, I would assume,
nice.
If I was on the Galactic Council. But who knows if I'm going to be overruled by the majority there. You never know.
Right, and according to some, those Nordic are awful big.
Oh, yeah, the reptilians as well, you know. And I always loved that movie, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when they're going to put an intergalactic thruway through our part of the solar system, and they needed to kind of, like, get rid of Earth, demolish it immediately. You know, that's just a big picture idea of how large things really are out there.
And how insignificant we are. That
yes.
They could just get rid of us that easily just to make a intergalactic highway.
Well, and just think what we think of just an anthill in the way.
Sure.
We probably wouldn't have too many qualms about just destroying that anthill to pave over even a walking path through the woods.
That's
or
right.
Whatever. So it kind of brings the perspective down to, indeed, we think we are quite unique here in this on the planet, but maybe we're not that unique when it comes to the overall picture of the universe.
I think it was Graham Hancock, and there is another scientist saying about talking about the climate change. They're scientists, and they've been here in Washington apparently to, studying this great flood thing that we had happen. They've found some evidence up here for them to be able to study it more, and you know they're saying maybe it's not a global thing, you know, maybe it's a galactic thing. We're just a part of this bigger picture that these other things going on in our universe can be affecting us since we've been thawing out for 200 years. I think they might be onto something there. It's a galactic thing, like you were saying, you know?
Yeah, it's very possible. Matter of fact, we've all heard those rumors or those theories that, you know, our own galaxy, our own solar system is revolving around the center of our Milky Way galaxy as well. Not only are we moving in space around our sun, but our solar system is moving in a system around the galaxy, and supposedly we are now entering into a particularly cloudy or energy laden portion of the galaxy itself. And there are many, many changes going on our small little planet because of the fact that we are actually moving in space in our own galaxy, going through different rough spots in the galaxy as well. So I think the whole idea of human-made global warming is probably a very small effect when you're talking about the influence of the sun and the actual galaxy that we're spinning around as well.
It wasn't Hancock. It was the founder of Greenpeace, who is a scientist. He released a paper that hasn't been challenged yet about carbon.
It's difficult for people to understand because there's cycles upon cycles, and some of them are short and some of them are long, and they don't all mesh together perfectly. So it's very chaotic, the climate of the Earth, and has been for all the billions of years it's been here. But the main point to know is, because this is all blamed on carbon dioxide, and they love to call it carbon, even though carbon dioxide is not soot. It is an invisible gas that is necessary for life. As a matter of fact, it is the building block of all life. All the carbon in carbon-based life, which is you and I and every other living thing on the planet, comes from carbon dioxide, either in the air or in the sea. It's dissolved in the sea from the air. It all came originally from volcanic action when the Earth was much hotter than it is today, but it's not being replenished at the same rate that it was then, so has in fact been declining steadily for the last 150 million years. And the truth is, if we hadn't come along and put some of it back in the atmosphere from where it came, you see, all the carbon dioxide that's being emitted by our burning fossil fuels, they're made with plants and plankton in the sea. They are 100% solar created from sunshine in the first place. And they were the result of carbon dioxide and water being combined into sugars, which powers the whole of life on Earth. So carbon dioxide is, in fact, the building block, the very essence of life. That's where all the carbon is from. And putting some of it back into the atmosphere where it came from is not a sin. It is, in fact, a very useful thing to be doing, as it is resulting in the greening of this entire planet, because carbon dioxide had become so low, and this is, it's almost like humorous that they have made it seem that there's too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere when it's been declining for actually 500 million years, the last 150 million, down to levels that very recently were almost low enough to kill the plants.
Why don't we hear more scientists say what you just said? I mean, it seems like that there's a chorus, and they all say the same thing, that we're going to die because of CO2.
Many other scientists believe what I'm saying, and the first time I gave this lecture on the decline of CO2 and the fact that we are life's salvation by putting some of it back into the atmosphere and greening the Earth was in October of 2015 in London with the Global Warming Policy Foundation as the key speaker. No one has refuted my presentation. It's in video, it's in print, it's in peer-reviewed scientific papers, and has not been refuted by a single person. And I've asked people to please tell me what's wrong with this theory. Well, they just haven't been able to come up with anything, and I know actually that I am right on this point.
I always love every once in a while to listen to those tapes of George Carlin. George Carlin always is famous when he says, you know, we have an effect on the planet. Give me a break. He says, the planet is like a big wet dog and can shake her back, flip us off in a moment's notice anytime she wants. And so I thought that was fascinating to me when his perspective was that we are just like fleas on a dog's back.
The planet has been through a lot worse than us, been through all kinds of things worse than us, been through earthquakes, volcanoes, plate tectonics, continental drift, solar flares, sunspots, magnetic storms, the magnetic reversal of the poles, hundreds of thousands of years of bombardment by comets and asteroids and meteors, worldwide floods, tidal waves, worldwide fires, erosion, cosmic rays, recurring ice ages, and we think some plastic bags and some aluminum cans are going to make a difference? The planet isn't going anywhere. We are.
That's going to do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. Michael W. Hall, the UFO I-Team, thanks for spending time with us today under lock and key.
Oh, thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Billy.
Well, that'll do it. If you want to hear this episode again or listen to past episodes, not sure why you'd want to do that, or yell at Bill for his new age TUI, log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.